You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, hour number two. We go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline and bring in Ohio's own Brent Sobleski, NFL analyst for the Bleacher Report. Brent, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Nathan. I appreciate it.
We're certainly happy to have you on. I directed as many people as I possibly could to your two great articles where you interview the offensive coordinator of Jared Goff at Cal, Tony Franklin, and, of course, the offensive coordinator for Carson Wentz at North Dakota State. What surprised you the most about either both of those guys coming out of these interviews?
Well, gentlemen, the first thing I'd have to say is the reason I wanted to do this is because we get into the funny season a little bit, right? Yep. When you get to the NFL draft, there's a lot of incorrect narratives that come along with quarterback prospects. How could we forget the circumference of Teddy Bridgewater's knee or Marcus Mariota being so good that it's actually a red flag? So, to me, that's where I really wanted to learn more about the individuals. These aren't commodities. These are young men who you want to know more about. So when I got to talk with both offensive coordinators, I really kind of want to understand what was asked of them and exactly who they are. Right? You know, these are quarterbacks. Sometimes what happens off the field is far more important than what we see on the field. With Jared Goff, for me, I want to know specifically how he was used in the offense.
Yep.
So many conversations about the air raid and how it doesn't translate to the NFL. And quite frankly, Coach Franklin was very vehement that it's not an air raid system, even though he was at the origination of such system in Kentucky with Tim Couch. So he talked about how it was a progression read system. And to me, that was important to see how he translates to the next level and how the coach really broke it down.
I think we've lost. Have we lost him?
He's on the Tony Grossi phone?
Oh, it would be a tragedy. Gibbs. All right. I think it's what a good concept that he has there, though, that he wanted to find out more about these guys from the people that would know him the best. I think that's a good thing to kind of dispel the myths. And it still makes me laugh. Teddy Bridgewater's hips were too narrow. His knee didn't have the right circumference.
And come on, man.
The Marcus Mariota, the fact that he has no red flags is a red flag. Do you remember that? That was last year.
The draft coverage in general is just little bit over the top.
It's too much. It's a little too much. But, you know, we'll do what we can here. And hopefully we can get Brent back because these articles, if you read them, are phenomenal. These two guys had as much autonomy as I think you'll ever hear of for any college quarterback in terms of their ability to make changes, to have the game kind of really be firmly placed in their hands. And Brent is back. Brent, we lost you about mid-thought there, but you were saying you wanted to dispel the myths and talk with the guys who knew these guys the best so you could, you know, present a real picture of these young men.
Well, first of all, I apologize. I was still talking, and I could hear you, and we just kept going.
Yeah, that's all right.
But when it comes to the individuals themselves, when I looked at Jared and what I wanted to discuss with Coach Franklin was the system, the air raid, and how it translated or how the lack of translation, as we've seen with, you know, players like Robert Griffin III, Johnny Manziel to an extent, and basically what was asked of him. And that, to me, was the key through that interview was him breaking down the progression read offense as it's currently based. And to me, that he gave a wonderfully detailed response when I asked him directly about it. So I really liked going into that and how he could break down his offense. That's very different from your traditional air raid that we've got to learn under at Kentucky when Tim Couch was there or Texas Tech when Mike Leach was there. For Carson Wentz, the two things I took about away from it talking to Coach Polasek, the first thing, which I think would surprise a lot of people, he's had a sore arm, gentlemen, for the last 2 months. He rushed back to play in the national championship games, and we all talk about how big of an arm Carson Wentz has. He might not be at full strength right now, even throwing through the national championship game, the recent Senior Bowl, or the Combine. So it gives you an idea of even how much further we can take his upside. And the other point being, he was more advanced in what he was asked to do at North Dakota State, which is a heavy run offense, than what I expected. You know, the amount of responsibility that was placed on his shoulder each and every down. So those are the two things that I really surprised me and I really wanted to hit on strongly.
What was the most surprising thing that you learned about Jared Goff?
Well, with him, I think it's not necessarily work ethic. I think we all know if you play at that level, I think it's really how fast he is through his progressions. I think you see it to an extent when you watch games. But Coach Franklin said he would make to his fourth, fifth read, consistently. Now, is that a little bit of hyperbole? You know, that's up for debate. But he would know when there were times when there's pre-snap reads, when he was automatically checking to that third, fourth guy based on what he saw before the ball was even snapped. So really how he approached the game mentally was a big factor discovering about Goff.
And as you look at both of these two quarterbacks, you know, which would you say, after speaking to both of their coaches and for what we learned from the combine, which of these guys had more control and flexibility and freedom at and around the line of scrimmage to change the play and the trust of the coaches and the leadership and the moxie to do so in pinnacle situations in football games?
Well, I think overall control, it would lend towards Goff. He was given free rein completely in the offense to make any type of change, whether it was protection, run game, run the pass to run, really varying it up overall from every aspect you would ask a quarterback at the next level. Wentz, again, this is where I was more surprised than I was expected to be, that he was so heavily relied upon. I give Goff the edge, but this is someone who had to call the pre-snap reads, calling out the mic, calling out all the protections. The offensive line didn't do it. The center didn't do it. That was the quarterback's responsibility in their system. Now that you don't have as a widespread of a passing offense, but it's still West Coast principles, so it gives you an idea of how difficult it can be. So I give the edge to Goff, but both of them had a lot more freedom than what a lot of people would have known before talking to both these coaches.
Talking with Brent Sobleski from Bleacher Report right now about these guys. So I asked you what the most surprising thing about Goff was. What was the most surprising thing you learned about Carson Wentz?
Just how much he just digests information. The final quote that the coach gave me was absolutely astounding, that after they won their national championship last year, and a couple days later, he called Carson, and I told him, "Are you over it?" "I am." And he asked him to break down every single play, offensive play, through 10 games. And he wanted his quarterback to give him a better play than what they actually called in that game. They would have been more successful. He digested that and went through all those games in 36 hours. He told me that was the only quarterback to actually ever finish and complete that task, let alone do it within 3 days with everything that was on his plate. So it just gives you an idea of how voracious and intelligent he is as a person. This is a gentleman, Carson's never gotten anything other than a 4.0 or an A in any of his classes his entire life. So it gives you an idea of what type of person he is.
Did you get a sense that both of these guys are incredibly hard workers, film rats, and did one kind of stand out versus the other in that regard?
It seemed like Wentz, Coach Polasek definitely went into that far more in depth than Coach Franklin did. Now, Coach Franklin admitted, publicly, which is in the piece, that he doesn't ask a lot of his quarterbacks to do the work. He just expects them to do it, and if they're doing it, it shows up, and which we can relate that to Jared being successful over 3 years and setting Pac-12 records. But when it came to specifically points that were given to me, Coach Polasek definitely lent towards Wentz being that guy that has that drive, that has that intelligence and determination and love for the game from that perspective.
So taking everything that you've gained into account, and again, understanding the myriad that the quarterback position has been here with the Cleveland Browns, if you have the number two overall pick and it's between Goff and Wentz, who are you taking, and essentially why can you hit your wagon to this guy for the next 5 years as your franchise quarterback?
Well, let me preface this by saying I think both are legitimate first-round prospects with franchise ability if you build around them correctly. I like both of them, and I think it could be a toss-up in that situation depending on how you want to build around them. But we're placing it in a vacuum based on what I personally watch, what I've discussed with the coaches. I still lean a little bit more towards Goff simply because I think he played at the higher level. He has more experience. He's 2 years younger. You can't underestimate that in this entire evaluation. And I think he's a little more advanced when it comes to the nuances of the passing game. So, again, for me, you can toss up. You can take either one, but I that would be my slight preference.
You and I in the same boat there regarding these two quarterbacks, both of whom certainly have become intriguing prospects. And it's funny that they're being written off, and as things go on, people are certainly seeming to like them a little more. Brent, was there anything that you got, because obviously these guys are going to be so positive with both of them, but is there anything that you got that said, hey, if Goff isn't successful, it's going to be because of this. If Wentz isn't successful, it's going to be because of this.
protected in that first year. We understand the narrative that we go back to and discuss that he's a slight frame. And yes, he came in a combine at 6'4", 215 pounds, and played 39 straight games without missing any time. And he's a tough kid. But Coach even said that he's going to have to be protected well, at least initially, to where he can continue to grow, mature, and really fill out into his role so he doesn't get beat up and his confidence goes down. So that was one thing on his side. With Wentz, I think a lot of it, the drive is just more experience. You know, Coach understands that, Coach Polisek completely understands that it's 23 games starting, 612 career passes. That, to an extent, can be looked at knocks to him. He tried to spin it positive and say, if you only had those many starts and you are this high on him now, imagine what he could be. So, you know, that's a positive slant on it, but you still have to have those concerns overall.
Brent, thanks for the great stuff, and I would urge anybody who wants to learn more about these two quarterback prospects, one of whom likely will end up here with the Cleveland Browns, go to Bleacher Report or follow Brent on Twitter. You can do it at Brent Sobleski and certainly get educated, because I not only did I learn a lot about those guys, what was cool for me, and I don't know if you feel the same way, was I felt like I learned a lot about football, especially from Franklin just breaking down the one play where he went through the five progressions that based on what the defense was doing and what the quarterback would see. And you think about the fact that you wrote that in about, you know, four paragraphs, but that's happening in 2.5 seconds for a quarterback.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Nick. And I actually sat down and I put the play, you know, a little GIF there. You can see the play. It literally happens, I believe, in 2.8 seconds. And it took me about 20 minutes to half an hour to transcribe the quote. So that gives you an idea of the amount of information these guys, young men, are processing at any given time on every single play.
Certainly. Appreciate the time, Brent, very much. Keep up the great work at Bleacher Report.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me as well.
You got it. Brent Sobleski, very good articles. Again, if you want to know more about these guys, read them, especially that way when you tell me why you don't want one of them, maybe you have some, you know, a little bit more information, as it were.
Yeah, I think for, and again, it's always going to be this way because that's the nature of the beast, but maybe it will give you some perspective that those last few comments about, you know, him transcribing a play that took 2.8 seconds and 20 minutes to 30 minutes, how easy it is to be oh so critical of someone for making a bad throw or an errant throw, or how difficult it really is, and the amount of information and the amount of responsibility as well that a quarterback like Jared Goff or quarterbacks in the National Football League have 60 plus times a game every time they walk up to that line of scrimmage.
It really is a wild, wild thing. All right, when we come back, we'll give you some of the sound of Hugh Jackson from last night. We'll also take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Zagura Wilhelm, Kia, Gribbs Gibbs, ESPN 850.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. We're going to go and hear a little bit from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson. Now, we can also take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Still to come, the Friday forecast, which we all get very excited about. But let's hear from Hugh Jackson. We already heard about him talk about taking the best player available. But what he said last night about finding the quarterback to lead this team, also interesting.
We're going to take every shot that we can to find a franchise quarterback. And I think we all know you don't find them in free agency. You draft them.
That's true. And you know, a lot of the scuttlebutt now around hand size. So how important is that to Hugh Jackson?
Hand size is important because in the AFC North, there's snow, there's rain, there's all kind of elements that you have to deal with. And sometimes if a guy doesn't have a big enough hand, he can't hold on to the ball and the guy gets stripped. I've seen it happen too many times, but that is not the only characteristic that you look for.
What specifically about Jared Goff's hand?
As long as he can hold the ball and he doesn't get stripped, it's not a problem to me. But if there's a problem that way, then it would be a consideration.
And I think when you watch Jared Goff's last year, not an issue, and he certainly had no problem talking to the reporters at the Combine about it. He was like, you know, how many fumbles did I have this year? Four.
It's not that big. Not that big of a deal.
What did you think as you were there? You got to see Hugh give these answers. What did? Could you read anything that you couldn't necessarily hear there?
I think he made his point. I think when he was asked at the Combine, he was asked about hand size in general. There was no mention of Goff at that point. I don't even know if Goff's measurement was in.
Yeah, nobody even knew about it then.
So,
yeah, spoke before.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think maybe the fact that people, because Hugh made his point there, the hand size matters. And then the Goff measurement comes out, and then the conclusion is made, oh, that means Goff's out. But I think that he's adding some context to the hand talk, which means it matters, just like every other criteria matters that you're evaluating a quarterback. So it's part of the puzzle. It's not the whole thing.
It's certainly there. How do you mentor a young quarterback as he's done so successfully, Mr. Hugh Jackson?
You believe in him, and you let him know you believe in him, and you know that things are not going to go right all the time, and you hope they do. But they don't. It's happened to Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, and you can name them. It goes on and on and on. But at the same time, when a quarterback has somebody that he knows that truly believes in him and creates an environment for him to be the best he can be and not ask him to do what everybody else in the National Football League is doing, but only what he can do at that time to be successful, then he has a chance to elevate himself going forward. If you put too much pressure on him too soon, yeah, I know everybody wants to win the Super Bowl the first year. But at the same time, I think everybody has to be realistic about where that player is and what he's trying to do, which is the toughest job in all of the world, which is playing quarterback in the National Football League, that the guy will get there in time. And I do believe that.
Good answer there. A little belief, a little patience, a little love, a little nurturing, a little education. A lot of good stuff there.
Yeah, and I think when I hear Hugh Jackson talk specifically about the quarterback, it makes me feel good about where our team, at least offensively, is going to be going, regardless of who we pick number two overall, if in fact it is even a quarterback. Just his belief in what he's done, his body of work, and his just subtle confidence of put your nose down, go to work, good things will happen, because he has seen it happen in front of him so many times with players from veterans all the way to rookies before.
And he's worked with young guys. He's worked with a young Joe Flacco. He's worked with a young Andy Dalton. So he's had success with those people. Free agencies where you get guys a little bit older who've been around the block in the NFL, but certainly an opportunity to get some talented 26-year-olds, 27-year-olds out there as well. Hugh Jackson was asked how he is going to approach free agency next week.
We're going to pick our spots. We're going to be very strategic about that process because, again, we're trying to build a team that's going to be here for a long time. I don't want, you know, there's no quick fix in the National Football League. You got to do this thing the right way, and we're not interested in doing it the wrong way. And, you know, everybody want us to go grab every big-time free agent there is and put him on our team and draft this person in the second pick and the 32nd pick. We're going to do what we think is best for our team going forward. Are there some free agents that we will take a look at? Yes, there's no question we will. But at the same time, we also understand that our team will be built through the draft.
And that is the key for this team, build through the draft. And they've got an opportunity here where we know they're going to have 10, maybe 11 picks in this draft, and they've got to start building successfully right there. This is a draft, important one for Sashi Brown and company. Now, one guy they may get back without having to draft him, who is a top talent in the National Football League, is Flash Gordon, the kid's favorite.
I mean, let's go. Let's make it happen. You could potentially be getting the equivalent of a top five pick in the NFL draft. And all we need you to do, Flash, is be on the straight and narrow. Please be on the straight and narrow.
That's right. Are you volunteering once again to be there and support him?
I will hire somebody even more straight and narrow than myself.
That influence.
Again, not saying much, but yes, there are the pool for you to choose your candidate will be vast.
It won't be the Grizz, let's just say that.
It will not be the Grizz. Gribbs, I think, could be. I think
Gribbs
would be
could definitely
strike me
be
as a fine mentor for Josh Gordon.
Part-time
Gribbs.
Life coach?
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
I'll think about it.
$30,000 bonus?
Maybe at the end of it, he could be Sir Josh Gordon if he follows your tutelage to a T. But really, the question is not for us. Or for Sir Andrew, it's for Hugh Jackson. What will Josh Gordon have to do to prove himself?
Oh, there's no question. Any player that's been on the outs for whatever the reasons are, there is a proven ground. There's an opportunity to get your way back, but if you keep cutting a corner and cutting yourself off at the nose, then there's no opportunity at all.
Nope, and that's it. He's got to come out. As you said, the kid, you laid it out straight and narrow for Flash Gordon. Before we take a break, let's get to the phones real quickly. 216-578-0850. Justin in Mississippi. Justin, welcome.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
So I was wanting to take a quarterback at two, like most fans are, but I had an unconventional question that I was curious about.
Okay.
And what if we move a couple middle picks or future middle picks to the Patriots for Garoppolo, since Tom Brady just had his extension, still draft a quarterback like a Prescott or Hogan from Stanford, somebody else that might not be, you know, one of the top prospects, but somebody who could work. And then you basically get, you know, two middle-tier quarterbacks, possibly one that might be a little bit more NFL-ready, sitting behind Brady a couple of years, depending on if you believe in the whole Belichick farm system, and be able to inload the front of the draft with pass rushers, receivers, you know, other weapons to build around the team. Just want to get y'all's thoughts on that.
I thought, and this is, I like Jimmy Garoppolo coming out of college, and I think he was good. Now, historically, the guys backing up Tom Brady have not gone on to have success in the National Football League. Maybe Matt Castle did briefly, but
got paid.
Nothing really to write home about there. We've had our own experience with that here. So that's Ryan Mallett. It doesn't necessarily equate to success. I know that people in that organization think very highly of Jimmy Garoppolo, and I don't think they're just trading him for a couple of future mid-round picks. Like, I just don't think they're doing that. And they know that they need a succession plan for Tom Brady, and
right.
I think they like Garoppolo, yeah. And I think they want him to be that succession plan.
Sure.
And even if he's not, they're going to ride him out through the
five.
They
picked him early in the second round.
And they're also going to ride out the rookie contract, if nothing else. Like, when they've made moves in the past, it's when the rookie contracts were set to expire.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't think that that's going to be the case with Garoppolo. I think Garoppolo is not going anywhere. All right, when we come back, Friday forecast on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Kid! Yeah, does that make you bob your head? Does that make you pull out the kid? You have your dance move, Sims and I have dissected your dance moves from Florida. It's kind of a dip and shake with the lips.
It depends how many cocktails we're in.
Yeah, and how empty the patio is for you at Ocean Prime. Yeah, at Ocean Prime down there in Tampa Bay. All right, Gibbs, join us.
All right, boys. Away we go on a Friday.
Number one.
Question number one today. What free agent do you want the Browns to sign?
I would say I'm going to be real judicious in going after any free agents. Maybe I would take Marvin Jones from Cincinnati.
Okay.
Sir Andrew?
I don't know if he's going to be available, and I don't know if he's even in the price range we're looking at. But I think a guy like Bruce Irvin is out there. He could be. He's a game-changing kind of player, is he not?
I think he would be nice. I don't know.
And he's young, too.
And he's young.
He's young.
Yeah. He just said today he'd take a hometown discount to stay in Seattle. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Outside of the Cleveland Browns, I don't hate the Marvin Jones. I think, but Marvin Jones most likely is going to want to, is the number one wide receiver on the market, is going to want to make a money.
And he shouldn't get it.
No.
Outrageous.
Outrageous. And so that being said, I would take Marvin Jones at the right price because I think he would add value to this Cleveland offense and his familiarity with Hugh Jackson. If not him, I would want Travis Benjamin back at the right price because from a special team standpoint, you know, he's a difference maker. And I think in his role in the offense while making the right dollar amount, he can be a good fit here in Cleveland. We've already seen that.
All right, you guys are talking receivers. I'll throw out a name for you. Rishard Matthews last year, and here's why. Caught 73% of his targets, 11.2 yards per target last year. Ryan Tannehill averaged 7.2 yards per attempt. That differential of over 4 yards is one of the top in the entire NFL from a year ago. That's interesting to me. But here's the guy I want, and I know he's got a soft spot in the kid's heart. Ladarius Green.
Ooh. I didn't want to steal him because I knew you were going to say him, but that
6'6", 240, runs a 4.5 40, or 4.45 40, I'm sorry, can get down the seam. Wasn't used the right way in San Diego. Here's something amazing. Averaged over 6 yards after the catch per reception for his career as a
tight
end.
Sounds spectacular.
This he might have to push Bibbs out of the way.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't want Bibbs pushed
he's
out.
He's got speed.
There's
and
room
he's
for
got
all
the
of us.
He got the boot moves of Bibbs.
He has been top 12 in the NFL in tight end yards after the catch per catch each of the last three seasons. And a couple of years ago when they utilized him more down the seam when Phil Rivers could still throw the ball down the field, he averaged 19 yards a catch and 9 yards after the catch per reception. But Darius Green, I think one of the things the Browns need to increase, team speed. And he would do that in spades at tight end.
You like him better than Fleener?
I think what you'd have to pay Fleener versus what you have to pay Ladarius, yes. I want to see Ladarius with a real opportunity.
Ladarius, you have to pay more, right?
No way. Than Kobe Fleener?
Oh, Ladarius is better than Kobe Fleener. Come on.
There's the kid. That's a hot take. No, definitely will be cheaper than Kobe Fleener. I like Fleener. Don't get me wrong. But I think Ladarius brings that athleticism that we need.
Is Lux stumping to keep this guy? I mean, the former college teammates, right?
He could, and Dwayne Allen they're letting go. And I like Dwayne Allen a lot.
He was playing with luck. I expected him to be a star right away. Yeah. He really never did anything.
I expected him to be Tyler Eifert with luck.
The truth is, Pep Hamilton knows Fleener and Dwayne Allen better than anybody probably maybe on the planet other than their familias. So that will say a lot if one of them ends up here. Same with Jones and Sanu. We'll find out what Hugh really thinks of them and how much we're willing to pay. I like Rashard Madison. I think he's got a little bit of attitude. He plays faster than his time speed. If we're going for a deep sleeper, Jaren Brown. I'm going to keep talking about him. From Clemson, 6'3", 4'3", 40.
That's all you got to say. Clemson wide receiver. Sign him. I mean, let's be clear. Let's look at the lineage.
The Cards have the first right of refusal on him, though, as a restricted free agent. All right. Go ahead, Gibbs.
Number two.
Just for the record, I'm a big fan of Jay Howard from Kansas City, defensive tackle.
I think in this draft, though, it's such a deep defensive tackle draft that if you were going to add at that spot, I'm not signing a free agent to do it. I think you can get a first-round talent in the third round, like Willie Henry represented by Agent of the Stars.
Fair. He may be gone in round one.
Oh, that's a hot take. Question number two. Golden State is 55-5 with 22 games to play. Best regular season record in NBA history is the Bulls' 72-10 record during the 95-96 season. Will Golden State finish with a better record than the 95-96 Bulls?
Yes.
Yes.
Undoubtedly.
Indubitably.
I think they end up tied.
We will see, my friend. We will see. Go ahead.
Number three.
Question number three. In honor of LeBron's little trip to South Beach this week, if you had 48 hours and had a private jet, where are you going?
Las Vegas, my friends. Las Vegas.
Restate this question again.
48 hours and a private jet.
48 hours and a private jet.
Yes. Okay. Where are you going?
Las Vegas for the kid. Go ahead, Gribbs.
I think I'm motivated by Gary Barnage. I'm going to Egypt. I don't know if I want to be there all
48
week.
48 hours? You're going to be
I'm going to get the full
He's going to have an extended
sights.
48 hours.
I don't know if I want to stay there that long. It looks a little hot, but yeah. I'm going to see what I need to see, say I've seen it, and I'll come back.
I would go three places. Las Vegas being one, South Beach, Miami being two, and back to San Diego for 48 hours of fun.
Okay. I would probably say Vegas. I would throw out, though,
48 hours in Vegas is just like,
yeah, it's perfect.
It's perfect. Perfect.
Maybe
it's
60 perfect. Hours is better, but 48 is pretty good.
I'm going to throw out another one because I think if we did it right and, you know, took sleeping pills or whatever so that we timed up our sleeping right, I'd like to go to Ibiza it's called. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind going there.
But I mean,
if
you have 48 hours in Vegas, how many of those hours are spent sleeping or napping?
Zero.
Sleeping or napping?
I'd say three.
No, you have to.
Three.
Realistically.
At the pool.
Do we have to work the next day when we come back, or can we sleep
No. It's back to work, my friend. Back to 48 work. Hours.
Listen.
I'll find a way.
3 hours of sleep.
3 hours and 48.
Yeah.
The other place I'd say.
No. Three hours. Like, you go, you're up the whole night. 3 hours, up the whole next night.
I'm more on the 5 chain. Like, 10 hours out of 48 hours, napping, sleeping.
Okay.
The third place I'd say the kid is, how about we go to St. Andrews, the birthplace of golf? See,
that's going to take you 48 hours to get there.
No, it's 6-hour flights. No.
That's what I was about to say. I mean, I'd feel bad if I didn't say this. If I had 48 hours in private jet, I would need to see family in England. I have Whole side of that family.
In a castle.
I would have to see the family.
The family crest.
Yes. No, I got a lot of family over there.
Yes.
You're a much better guy than me.
Taking it off for myself.
Yeah, for man. Sure. For sure.
That's why I'm the life coach candidate.
That's why he's
hanging out with Flash Gordon, and I'm not.
That's right. Yes.
Go ahead, Gibbs. Number
four. Final one today, guys. In honor of Jim Harbaugh, who is your best follow on Twitter?
Well, I think you just said it right there.
What did you think of his trash talk yesterday to the man down in Rocky Top?
I love it. You know what? Mind your own shop before you start coming at us.
And Tennessee's a program that's in shambles. It's been in shambles since Phil Fulmer left.
It's kind of like a cheap – it's like an easy – it's low-hanging fruit for Jimmy.
Well, you don't come at him then.
True.
Go sleep in some 17-year-old's bedroom.
Don't come at him.
Top bunk, hopefully.
Gribbs, who's your favorite Twitter follower?
I like to – I'll give it a shout-out because I like to know what's happening in my community. Lakewood Citizen, great account to follow. I'll give it a shout-out. I know everything.
Lakewood Citizen. All right, you're hired for Flash
Gordon. Tweet at Josh Gordon.
Sashi, we have the solution to the Josh Gordon bro.
You're hired. Oh, my God. Oh, wow.
Gibbs would appreciate that.
I could have given like.
I do follow the Lakewood
I could have given 100,000. I could have given 100,000 guesses, and I never would have come to that answer from you. Gibbs, never in a million years. Gibbs, who's yours?
I do love phony Bill Walton on Twitter.
Phony Bill Walton?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go with one that I've just started enjoying lately called Cold Takes Exposed.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Where they take quote-unquote hot sports takes that are proven to be totally wrong and put people on blast. And I really enjoy it. I do. I really enjoy it. All right, we're going to take our break here. When we come back, we'll wrap it up here on Cleveland Browns Daily right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. We've got some breaking news here in Berea.
ESPN Cleveland, breaking news.
That was pretty fantastic, guys. Just got word from the Browns owners, Jimmy and Dee Haslam, that Alex Shiner has decided to move on from his role as president of the Browns. He will serve the organization as a consultant for the remainder of 2016. The Haslam saying, and I quote, "We greatly appreciate Alex's commitment and work as president of this organization. Alec is extremely capable and has helped us establish some very positive inroads with significant focus on our fan experience, First Energy Stadium, and our business partners. He was integral to the rebuild of our organization, the renovations of our stadium and training facility, and many of our strategies on the football side of our business. His guidance has helped accelerate our learning curve as NFL owners, and we will always appreciate that. Alec is ready for the next challenge in his career. He understands where we are as an organization and the limitations for further leadership in our new structure. He is one of the most talented executives in the industry, and we are fully confident of success in whatever permanent role he takes next. We know you will join us in wishing him well and his family only the best." So that is the statement from Jimmy and Dee Haslam again. Browns president Alex Shiner has moved on from his role as president of the Cleveland Browns, choosing to explore new opportunities here. And I personally want to thank Alex Shiner, because without Alex Shiner, I wouldn't be here with the Cleveland Browns. It was my conversations with him and certainly my belief in him and his belief in this organization that led me to the Browns 3 years ago. And I will be forever grateful for the opportunity that he provided me. And I think his legacy, when we look back on it in his time here with the Browns, he grew the business side significantly in terms of the profitability of this company. He did a great job with that. The stadium renovations he oversaw, the training facility renovations here in Berea he saw. And when you look at the football structure that is in place with the Cleveland Browns going forward, on the structure that they arrived at, Alex Shiner in many ways is the architect of that structure. He hired Sashi Brown. He brought Ken Kovach with him from Dallas to run the analytics department. He was instrumental in bringing Paul DePodesta, the chief strategy officer of this team, in. So what you see here from Alec and from the Browns is really kind of his brainchild and his vision for how an NFL organization should be run. And I think he feels that he's been here. He has accomplished that. He's done the stadium. He's grown the business side and is looking for new opportunities and challenges, whether it be in the National Football League or in sports or back with his legal background. But certainly I wish Alec the very, very best. And again, I'm grateful for the time. It was under his vision, quite frankly, that Cleveland Browns Daily was created and expanded to 2 hours and given us this platform that, you know, Matt, you and I have now shared for a couple of years. So certainly I certainly don't have many better friends in this industry than Alec Shiner, and I want to wish him personally the very, very best. And I got to say, I'm honest, I'm sad to see him go, but I understand a guy like that. You know, he always wants a new challenge and a new opportunity and has done so much here that he's ready for that next play.
Yeah, and I mean, for me personally, you know, our dialogue last offseason about this show, the direction of the show, and its relevance to the football side of things and our personal look at this building each and every day, and he had a hand in that. And it'll be very interesting to see what that next challenge is. And I think, you know, business owners and business people, once they conquer a mountain or they feel they've worked it as hard or as far as they can potentially take it, they always hand those keys over to someone. But that those wheels keep turning, and it'll be interesting to see where he lands next.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So again, if you're just joining us, the big news is that Browns president Alec Shiner has decided to move on from his role as president of the Browns. Jim and D. Haslam tweeting out their support and thanks for Alec for everything that he's done again in the rebuilding of the organization, the renovations of First Energy Stadium, enhancing the fan experience there, the training facility, which will house obviously many of the employees of the Browns and the team. And of course, and this is key, many of the strategies on the football side of our business. I mean, that is a very telling statement there from the Haslams about what he did to go ahead and help shape the organization that we all are so excited about going forward with Sashi Brown, Paul DePodesta, Andrew Berry, Ken Kovach, of course, and head coach Hugh Jackson. So certainly want to thank Alec for the time and the opportunity that we certainly have had there. Guys, with that being said, any final thoughts here about just anything as we wrap up this week here on CBD? And certainly I know the kid, you know Alec very well, and certainly have gotten, you know, he's part of the reason you have this opportunity to be here on Fridays with us.
Yeah, very, very sad for me. I think that the Browns are on their way to a Super Bowl, and it is his blueprint. And I wish him well. And,
certainly bittersweet. I'm excited for him because he wants a new challenge. But at the same time, I'm very personally very I'm sad to see him go. Sad to see him go. I think the Browns certainly have prospered under him on the business side, there's no question, in the face of really what has been a very tough football environment to be successful
on the
business side.
To be successful business-wise when on the field, frankly, we were not good at all, is just I think he's done a home run job. I think you could equate it to, from a business perspective, really a Bill Belichick type. You know, maybe people on the street don't know it, you know, but what he's done from a business perspective, what he's done with the facility, what he's done with the stadium, what he did with Jerry World. I mean, he's at the top of the profession, and you know, we all hope to see him on top somewhere else real soon.
Absolutely, and I have no doubt that he will be on top very, very soon. Very talented guy, one of the brightest people I've ever worked with. And not only did he do the things that we talked about in terms of, you know, the stadium and the renovations and enhancing fan experience, I can tell you from being here in this building, the corporate, environment that he created and fostered in this building on his side is as positive and inclusive and just kind of as fun as you could ever hope to work for under the structure of knowing you're working for a corporation.
Correct. And I agree that with that. And I second that because being a player and getting exposed to the business side of a football organization has been very interesting to me. And I have continually said, I say this to Kevin Griffin, you know, who all of these and many different individuals, all who operate under Alec Shiner, that the Cleveland Browns are doing things on the non-football side unlike any other organization, and they're taking the steps as a franchise to project themselves, even though they don't match it on the field, as a first-class organization. Now, when it matches up with the performance on the football field, the Cleveland Browns will be where D and Jimmy want them to be.
Absolutely. So I just want to conclude by saying thank you so much, Alec Shiner, for your time here and all you've done for the Browns, the fans of the Cleveland Browns, and certainly for me personally, very, very much appreciated and excited to see what is next for him. All right, that'll do it for us. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys on ESPN 850 for Sir Andrew Gribble, for the kid, for Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thank you for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.